Part 3. Within the next couple of days, most people, especially Ronan's team, made an effort to be nice to Buffy and include her in things. Taylor talked to her about the little things going on. Shepard kept questioning her about weapons and ships. Rodney and Beckett fought over her almost daily. Carson kept insisting that she needed a thorough checkup, and McKay kept trying to drag her off for some obscure project. Both of them and almost everybody else kept touching her casually, and the two docs kept trying to physically drag her someplace or other. Rodney especially seemed to have forgotten what she'd threatened him with on her first day. They treated Buffy like she was a part of their group, a regular person, a member of their expedition. They treated her like a friend. It made Slayer's skin prickle and itch. She wasn't used to so many people around, wasn't used to any physical contact that did not involve pain of some kind, unless it came from Ronan. Nor was she used to making conversation with anyone but him. Every time someone touched her or tried to make small talk, the Slayer inside her rose to the surface, whispering in her ear to lunge across the table and rip the head off the poor guy on the other side. Constantly, there was talk about what Ronan did when he came here. Ronan was no woman that got groped everywhere he went, and Ronan had no supernatural creature sleeping in his chest. Ronan was not more animal than human sometimes, and Ronan still had some ruins of his old life to cling to and go back to from time to time. But most of all, Ronan didn't have inhuman senses that picked up on everything that happened for 50 feet around, and Atlantis was not humming her childish joy at finally having company again in his ear. Long story short, all the humanity around her was slowly eroding away Buffy, revealing what lay beneath, revealing Slayer. The problem was that no one seemed to realize the danger, so Slayer decided it was time to act, time to remind everyone of what she was. People called her Slayer, but they forgot the meaning of the word. Slayer meant killer, and to forget that in her presence would mean death sooner or later. Because one of these days, when someone put a friendly hand on her shoulder, she was simply going to tear it off before she realized it. She liked Ronan's new friends, and she liked his new home. But people had to understand what she was. It was on the fifth day that Slayer flirted with and teased 5 Marines into sparring with her. She made sure to provoke them around noon, and she knew Taylor and Shepard were in the training room. Weir and Rodney tended to watch them when they had the time spare, and she simply told Ronan to be there. The fight, once it had started, was over almost too fast to follow. Buffy didn't bother pulling her punches. She just didn't aim to kill. Within 5 seconds, all 5 of her opponents, some twice her size and thrice her weight, were on the ground, motionless. 2 had broken noses, 1 several cracked ribs, and 1 a broken leg. All of them were badly bruised. The training room looked like a sight straight out of a war zone. But the most horrifying thing was not the Marines, it was Slayer, standing in the middle of the carnage, barely breathing hard, blood not her own dripping from her left hand. She seemed completely untouched by what she'd just done as she turned and left the room without a word, leaving a trail of blood behind her. As the Marines were taken away, and the order to find their guest was shouted at some hapless guards, Weir turned on Ronan with fury in her eyes. "You said she was no danger! She just beat 5 of my best men into a pulp without provocation! That is not dangerous!" She was angry with Buffy for beating up her people. But more than that, she was angry with herself and her most trusted people for not seeing the danger walking among them, for letting a complete stranger into her city without knowing anything about her. Ronan, spending most of his free time with the newcomer, was a welcome target for her ire, but he didn't rise to the bait. His reason for watching his lover beating the other men into a pulp after flirting insanely with them was to explain. He stayed where he was, leaning against the wall, arms crossed in front of his chest. He didn't necessarily agree with what Buffy had done, but he understood that she thought it was needed. He understood that when Buffy thought something was necessary, She would do it, no matter what he said. She'd been alone for too long, in this galaxy and her home, to really rely on people. She might ask his opinion, but it was a long way to go until she actually listened to his answer. So he watched Weir yell herself hoarse at him before he snapped a single word straight in her face. Slayer. What about her? The word has a meaning. It's more than a name. If you don't forget that again, something like this, he waved an arm to indicate the room at large, will never happen again. Then he walked out of the room in search for his lover. He found her on top of one of the highest towers, leaning against the roof, staring into the cloudy sky. Her face was suspiciously blank, and on anyone else, he would have expected tears. You didn't have to do this. Yes, I did. They didn't understand. Who you are? What I am. He dropped down beside her, careful not to touch her, and turned his glance out toward the ocean. Why is this so important to you? Why now? She shrugged, still not meeting his gaze. They have to know Slayer before they can meet Buffy. I can't let my guard down around people who don't know how to handle me. Why now? Ronan repeated, turning to look at her. She met his gaze, seeming a bit startled at how close he was, or maybe at his question. They're your friends, she explained like it was obvious. This is your home. I want to... Finally, she shook her head and snorted at her own inability to express her feelings. I'm not good at this shit, Ronan. Please don't make me say it. Say what? She glared. He blinked innocently at her. She tried to slap him on the arm, but missed as he jerked back. Say that I want to get along with those people because they belong to you, and I want them to like me. All right? Are you happy now? I said it. Buffy, the monster, wants to be loved. She turned away from him, giving him her back in helpless anger, and while she stared across the ocean, she wistfully remembered a time when she'd known how to express her feelings and how to make friends. More than 8 years. She wondered if they still thought of her sometimes, if they missed her every once in a while when her birthday came around, or when they talked about the past. Maybe it was a stupid idea to want to stay in Atlantis. Just as stupid as getting attached to Ronan, right? And you've done that already. She felt a pair of strong arms slowly wind around her waist, giving her the chance to protest and pull away. She didn't. Instead, she relaxed and leaned back into the embrace, wishing for the first time in years that she could still cry. It's just hard, you know? Being human. A low chuckle rumbled in her left ear, followed by, "Yeah, I know." After the Slayer incident, as it was quickly dubbed, everyone was walking on eggshells around Buffy for a while. When they realized that without provocation, Slayer was not going to blow up, they gradually relaxed, although most people still made an effort not to touch her unless it couldn't be avoided. They'd just seen too many weird things to not adapt. In return, Buffy let some of her more girlish side shine through, now that she wasn't constantly on edge anymore. She even spent an evening or two with Taylor, doing girly things, and she watched football with John. One night, almost a month after her arrival, even found her playing poker with the Marines she'd beaten up. They guilted her into playing strip poker with them after a few drinks, until Ronan decided she'd had enough fun, and dragged her off to bed, where he spent several hours helping her work off her alcohol-induced energy. It was a satisfying night for all parties involved. Only Elizabeth seemed to have a hard time forgiving the incident. She kept a cool distance towards Buffy, and in extension, Ronan, seemingly unwilling to understand that what Buffy had done had not been to get everyone to leave her alone, but to get everyone to leave her alone for their own sake. She didn't understand that when Buffy said she was a weapon, she was literal. A whole 2 months after the incident, Elizabeth was walking the hallways of Atlantis in the middle of the night. She thought about what had happened recently, namely Michael. The Wraith turned human, their experiment, their miracle, and now their downfall. The second Beckett had come up with a plan, Slayer had told them no, followed a close second by Ronan. Both of them had refused to aid in capturing Michael and playing the game the rest of Atlantis's crew had come up with in order to try and integrate Michael into human society. And just like they had prophesied, everything had gone completely wrong. Michael had rejoined the Wraith with the information that Atlantis still existed. Any day now, a hive would pop up on their deep space radar. Of that, Elizabeth was sure. And what would happen then? She was torn out of her morbid thoughts by the soft swish of a door opening and closing, and upon looking up, she found a sheepish-looking Slayer standing only a few feet away in front of Ronan's door. It was a strange look on the blonde woman's face, but it made her look decidedly harmless, and a lot younger than she usually looked. Not that anyone had ever managed to worm her age out of her, and her face didn't give away much. It seemed timeless, frozen by too much pain and violence. "Up so late?" Elizabeth asked, maybe a bit more snidely than necessary. "Sneaking back to my room," Slayer replied, her voice bland. Elizabeth frowned. "Why don't you just move in with Ronan? Everyone knows you're together, and you spend most of your time in there anyway." She'd wondered why Buffy insisted on a room of her own, ever since the Slayer had requested it after the first night in the city, but had never managed to ask. Now the blonde just shrugged and said, "It's a long story." Determined not to let this chance pass, the older of the two women nodded. "Let's find some coffee then." Buffy watched out of the corner of her eye as Elizabeth walked beside her toward the canteen. The other woman looked nervous and a bit angry, or possibly annoyed. Probably because she still couldn't seem to swallow the Slayer incident. It was the only reason Buffy had agreed to have a talk in the middle of the night, really. She didn't need an enemy here, not while she was trying to make this place home. Besides, she'd been a bit unfriendly toward the scientist over the whole Michael business. The two women settled on a window seat, each with a giant mug of coffee in front of them. Buffy decided that she was going to be the one to start. "It has to do with the incident, you know." "What has?" Slayer chuckled. "The reason I still have my own room is the same that made me beat up the boyos." It was a visible process. The stiffening of Elizabeth's back, the thinning of her lips, and the clenching of her hands around her mug. Her voice was as cold as it ever got as she snapped. "And that would be..." Buffy leaned back, refusing to add to the anger in the room. Someone had to be reasonable, and if the head of Atlantis refused to be it, well, then Buffy would. She took a sip of her coffee, strong enough to wake the dead, before taking a deep breath and explaining. "When I first arrived here, I told you that I was a weapon. You listened to it, you agreed, and you didn't understand at all what I was talking about, did you?" The brunette blinked, not knowing what to say. Luckily, Slayer didn't seem to expect or need an answer. "You didn't. No one here did. I've been making myself into something deadly since I was 15 years old. If you've got a loaded gun, you don't leave it lying around in the open and invite people to test the trigger. It would be careless of you. By treating me like I was one of you, someone who isn't dangerous, you did just that. You played with the trigger, and I was about to go off. Words didn't help, so I acted. I pulled the trigger myself, under controlled circumstances, and showed you what damage the gun could cause. Crude, I'll admit that, but effective. And now you hate me." There was a long silence between the two women, as Elizabeth tried to assimilate all the information she'd just been dealt, and found herself wondering if words would not have been enough. Her coffee was only lukewarm by the time she came to the decision that, no, she had needed to see with her own two eyes what would happen when someone pulled the trigger on this particular gun. She remembered that within 10 minutes of arriving, Slayer had had Rodney by the proverbial balls, telling him never to touch her again without permission. The warning hadn't lasted longer than a day. In hindsight, it had been stupid of them all. They didn't know anything about the blonde, except that she had spent years living under appalling circumstances, and she had survived them. And then they had treated her like she was a regular member of their expedition. Suddenly, beating up 5 men seemed a small price to pay for their carelessness. Still, but those Marines are my men. They are my responsibility, and I can't let you walk around beating up my people. Slayer chuckled. They've forgiven me a long time ago, you know? Elizabeth blinked. She hadn't known that. Yeah, it involved alcohol, strip poker, and some not-so-subtle flirting on their part. Very manly way of making up, and we all had one hell of a hangover. But we're good. Think you can forgive me now? Instead of answering the question, the scientist decided to counter with one of her own. What does that have to do with your own room? She received another of those infuriating shrugs that didn't tell her anything at all. In combination with Slayer's blank face, they were about as expressive as a white wall. Do you know the scar on Ronan's left forearm, going from his wrist almost to his elbow, very straight and deep? It took her a second, but the brunette remembered seeing it before and wondering what left such wounds. She nodded. It looks like a knife wound. It is. One night I was having a nightmare, and he touched me accidentally. He was bleeding all over both of us before I was fully awake. Elizabeth opened her mouth, but quickly shut it again. In the 2 months Slayer had been with them, she'd never opened up to anyone, and now she was making a real effort to make peace. The older woman was not stupid enough to ruin this with some random comment. You're afraid of hurting him. So, think you can forgive me now? She repeated her earlier question, completely changing the subject, and Elizabeth knew that she couldn't avoid an answer anymore. She'd been given a lot in the last 30 minutes, and it was time she returned a bit of it. Yes. The smile that split the other woman's face was the first genuine one she had ever seen, and it lit her whole face up. My name is Buffy. It was Elizabeth's turn to smile widely now. She understood the gesture perfectly well. That is a short form of Elizabeth, isn't it? Buffy, funny name that, but it fit the woman she might have been under different circumstances. Buffy snorted. Yeah, it is. 3 weeks later, everything was falling apart. The Wraith were coming with a hive ship, and Atlantis had no notable defenses besides some new drones and a half-working ancient ship they'd found the week before. The Daedalus was pretty much useless, since the Wraith had found a way to block the Asgard technology used to beam bombs on board their hives. Everyone, without exception, was working themselves ragged trying to find something, anything, that would be useful, but so far they had made no progress at all. It seemed hopeless, and they had only 22 hours left until the calculated arrival of the hive and their subsequent annihilation. It was enough to set even the usually stoic couple of Buffy and Ronan on edge. In fact, Elizabeth suspected that half the nervous energy in the city was generated by the two of them alone. Their initial grim glee at having prophesied this exact event had quickly faded, leaving them both taut as a spring. Buffy was currently pacing the gate room, her hands twitching occasionally like they were itching for a weapon, for something to smash its skull in. The rage boiling just below the surface was visible in every rolling step she took, and her eyes were as cold as a blizzard in December. She reminded Elizabeth of a caged animal pacing behind bars. Beautiful and dangerous, and you just knew that if it ever managed to get past these bars, it would gladly tear you limb from limb. No matter how insensitive, everyone in the city made a point of moving out of the way when Slayer came walking toward them. They all felt the wall of aggression and violence around her, and none wished to collide with that wall. Ronan, while not pacing, wasn't much better. He barely talked, was quick to anger, and didn't work well with others at all. But overall, he still seemed more in control than his lover. He was less wild. Elizabeth stood, watching them both from the control room, not faulting them for their behavior at all. The enemy, their greatest nightmare, the thing they both hated with every fiber of their beings, was coming, and they were waiting for it like sheep when they were supposed to be the wolf. A predator made prey is not a nice sight to watch. She jumped a bit as John stepped up beside her. He looked tired, with dark bruises under his eyes and his usually perky hair hanging in his face. He leaned against the railing and followed his colleague's gaze toward a pacing slayer. He sighed. We have to stop her. Half the base is more scared of her than of the wraith. Rodney already broke two mugs today. He's so nervous in her presence. She's a time bomb. Elizabeth shrugged without looking at him. But can you fault her for it? I can't imagine how they must both feel. Yeah, me neither. Their conversation was cut off abruptly when Ronan, who'd been sitting close by, climbed to his feet like a titan moving after centuries of imprisonment. It was the first time he had moved in hours, and everyone in the vicinity stopped whatever they were doing to watch him as he walked up to the two leaders conversing at the railing. He moved straight past them, jumping down into the gate room, disregarding the stairs being only a few feet away completely. More people stopped their work to watch as he slowly made his way into the middle of the circular room, where he stopped, right in Buffy's path. He stood with his feet spread slightly apart, rolling his shoulders and neck. Buffy sidestepped his big form with ease, not paying attention to him as she kept pacing. She never saw his fist coming, until it hit her square in the face, turning her head with the force of the punch. Upstairs in the control room, Rodney dropped the third mug of the day, and even the most oblivious scientists laid down their work in complete silence. For a very long moment, Buffy stayed as she was, head turned to the side, hair flung wildly across her face. Then she turned to look at Ronan, who stood 2 feet away from her, his face a study in nothingness. It was completely empty. Elizabeth asked, without turning away from the display, "What is going on?" John replied in kind, snorting quietly, "Looks like someone is doing our job of distracting her." "By beating her up?" He chuckled. "I don't think we could beat her up." "So we leave them be?" "We leave them be." Buffy moved first by taking a step to the left as they started circling each other. As they circled each other and circled and circled and circled, and then suddenly Ronan jumped forward, intent on slamming his fist into her face. Buffy dove out of the way and ducked around him, kicking him in the kneecap as she passed. Up in the gallery, Elizabeth had to turn a blind eye on the furious betting that was going on, while most of her people were cheering loudly. She couldn't suppress a small smile, though, as the thought that Ronan might not only be distracting Buffy on purpose crossed her mind. "I think this is exactly what everyone needed," she admitted while turning around, only to find John several feet away, betting his latest DVD of football matches on the Slayer, his usually boyish grin back on his face. Ronan regained his footing faster than Buffy expected, and used his advantage to elbow her hard and fast. She took a step back to avoid the brunt of the attack, then spun forward and threw a kick. It only caught him in passing, goading him right into her waiting fist. He flew several feet backwards, landing hard on his ass, but immediately jumped back to his feet. He raced Buffy, who spun aside and shoved him. He fell, kicking her feet out from under her. She landed hard, spinning as she did and burying her elbow in his abdomen. Then they were both back on their feet and circling each other once more. Upstairs, Elizabeth felt dizzy, and John cheered loudly. After almost 10 minutes, Buffy finally managed to kick all the air out of Ronan, and quickly jumped to straddle him before he could regain his bearings. For a second, they stared at each other, breathing hard before Slayer bent down and devoured the lips of the man beneath her with a fiery passion. Even after both combatants had gotten to their feet and hastily left the room 5 minutes later, there were still fights going on about who had won. Buffy, because she beat Ronan, or Ronan, because he was currently getting real lucky. Either way, it took them over 2 hours to reappear, looking a lot more relaxed than they had before their brawl. Elizabeth made her way over to the blonde woman to ask if she was all right. Buffy shrugged, then nodded. I am now. I just don't sit still very well. There was a glint of cold fire in her eyes, a glint of anticipation that made the other woman flinch back a bit, before she swallowed hard and nodded. The Wraith arrived before anyone had found a usable solution, but unlike everyone expected, they didn't attack. Instead, they suggested a deal. Naturally, the discussion going on after Weir had briefly conversed with Michael was loud and wild. Some people thought they should accept what the Wraith offered and be glad they wouldn't die. Others were enraged by the fact that agreeing to the terms of the Wraith was even considered. A third party kept mostly silent, unconvinced that aiding Wraith against Wraith was the right thing to do. A last group, consisting of a few hot-headed fighters, insisted on pretending to go along with the deal until a way to dispose of the Wraith was found. Like they had during the discussion about Project Michael, which had led to this disaster, Ronan and Buffy kept their opinions to themselves. They were leaning against the wall on opposite ends of the overcrowded room, occasionally exchanging sardonic looks over the heads of the arguing masses. It was Dr. Weir who finally restored order by grabbing a stack of files sitting in front of Rodney and slamming it down on the table. Hard. The resounding smack was loud enough to shut everyone up. This is not getting us anywhere. One after the other. Slayer, Ronan, what do you think? Most people in the room turned to watch the two, remembering that they had been completely right with their predictions last time. Ronan shrugged and nodded at his lover, who took a step away from the wall and looked directly at Weir. They're Wraith. There was some grumbling about the cryptic comment not being much use, but Elizabeth as well as John were watching Slayer closely, and they both saw the same thing. Rage, hate, determination, and disgust. For Buffy, Wraith was synonymous for vile and evil. Her reasoning for not agreeing to the deal was simply that they were Wraith. She didn't need anything else. It was enough that they were what they were. Slowly, Elizabeth nodded her head, her hands still on the file in front of her. She smoothed the topmost sheet of paper and looked at every single person in the room. They're Wraith. We have 45 minutes left to find a solution.
45 minutes? 45 minutes! Are you all daft? How the hell are we supposed to find a solution in 45 minutes that we haven't found in 3 weeks? Even if we manage to blow them up, they'll still have time to pass on our secret. It's impossible!
Rodney was yelling himself hoarse with frustration, while his colleagues, while not happy by his outburst, nodded silently beside him. They had nothing that even looked promising, much less resembled a real plan. John lifted a hand as if to stop his friend's tirade, and surprisingly, it worked. He shrugged his surprise off after a few seconds and asked, "Why don't you tell us what you guys have been working on? Maybe someone has a new idea that might help." The look he received for that clearly stated that Rodney did not believe that anyone had anything to say that he hadn't considered yet. Still, he started talking. "Well, we know that the Wraith language is a derivation from the Alteran, or the ancient language. From what little experience we have with Wraith technology, we built the theory that their technology, too, is based on the ancient technology we use. We are trying to find a way to dig beneath the Wraith programs and get into the ancient bases they are built on. If we manage that, we can rewrite their whole ship mainframe however we please." Elizabeth was the first to work through what her head scientist had just explained, and asked, "Where's the problem?" Rodney exploded again.
"Problem? Problem, she asks. Maybe the problem is that we have nothing to test our theory on, or that, even if we had, we would have to work through 10,000 years of Wraith programming to get to the ancient part. Maybe the problem is that such things take years and not 45 minutes, and we can't just walk into their hive and link into their mainframe with no idea what we're doing without getting caught within minutes.
I can. The statement was spoken so quietly and so simply that it took everyone in the room a moment or two to work out what it meant. Then everyone whipped around to stare at Slayer, who was once more leaning against the wall, arms crossed under her chest.
I know from my time... She took a small but deep breath that didn't go unnoticed by most of the room before saying, while I was a captive of the Wraith, that they used their telepathy to handle their technology, like the ancients did. If their mainframe is truly based on ancient technology, then I should be able to hack in there. If I can manage to stop their communication and then drop their shields, we can destroy them without being revealed. If. McKay slapped his own forehead with some force in the resulting silence, embarrassed that he hadn't thought of Slayer's ability to link directly to the city's mainframe. Elizabeth was a bit more pragmatic than that, and simply nodded. What do you need in order to try? 43 minutes later, Atlantis agreed to a deal with the Wraith Hive floating above the city, under the condition that a team of scientists was allowed into the Hive to check that there were no human prisoners on the ship that the Wraith would feed on during the duration of their deal, as well as convince themselves that the Wraith had no nefarious intentions toward Atlantis. 28 minutes after the Wraith agreed, Buffy cornered Elizabeth in her office and pressed a folded piece of paper in her hands. The brunette carefully unfolded it and read the list of names on it. Faith Lehane, Dawn Summers, Willow and Alexander Harris, Rupert Giles, Daniel Osborne. What are those names? Buffy took a deep breath, shoving her hands deep into the pockets of her camouflage pants. They are names I need you to check for me the next time you get in contact with Earth. If there was a town named Sunnydale that crashed into a sinkhole in 2003, then I'd like you to tell them that I'm all right and they don't have to worry. If not, then I'd simply like to know how they're doing if I come back. Elizabeth blinked. So you really are from Earth. We've been wondering. There were a lot of things that pointed toward Buffy being from Earth, starting with her knowledge of football rules and not ending with some of the phrases and patterns of speech she used. But until now, no one had ever dared asking. The blonde shrugged, and for once there was an expression on her face as she did it. A yearning sadness. An Earth, yes. Might be some parallel dimension, I'm not sure. And since Rodney is currently writing a letter to his sister, I thought, well, if I'm from this Earth, I'd like it if there was someone who cared, just in case, you know? It'd be nice if someone told them I didn't simply abandon them, and that I died trying to do something good here. It's been a while since I did anything to be proud of. Not knowing what to say, Elizabeth smoothed the list between her fingers and placed it in the middle of her desk. Then she turned back to the other woman standing in the middle of her office, looking a lot like the small and fragile person she seemed at first glance. What would you try to do if I hugged you right now? She asked. Buffy snorted, her back straightening a bit. I'd probably smack you. You'll check the names?
I'll check the names. Satisfied, the other woman made to leave the room, hands still in her pockets.
There are, you know.
She stopped on her way out and asked without turning. Are what?
People who care.
Elizabeth thought she heard a smile in the younger woman's voice as she said, I know. I'm trying to get used to it.
Part 4. 96 minutes later, Shepard, McKay, Ronan, and Slayer arrived at the Wraith Hive. The team had been picked cleverly by John and Elizabeth. Rodney was their official scientist, giving him an excuse to run around and ask obnoxious questions that kept everyone from thinking straight. Not that he wouldn't have done that anyway, but for once he was actually encouraged to be annoying. John was there as the official ambassador, and because there was no way in hell he was going to let any of his people walk into a hive alone. Officially, Ronan and Slayer were their bodyguards, as all of their weapons had to be left behind in Atlantis. Although Buffy thought the Wraith really needed to learn how to check for weapons. Unofficially, Slayer's job was to try to work a way into the ship's mainframe and solve all their problems with a bang. Ronan was there to cover for her if she got too distracted, and because he strictly refused to let her set foot into Wraith territory on her own. Their group of four was greeted by Michael and a guard of soldiers. While Shepard and McKay at least tried to act civilly, Buffy and Ronan had no such qualms. They simply stood at the back of the group and glowered at everyone. "I am surprised to see you here," Michael remarked upon seeing them. Ronan glared and Slayer hissed. "Oh, we're only here to make sure we get first dibs when it comes to tearing you limb from limb." Her voice was cold enough to send a shiver down Rodney's spine, despite the nervous heat he felt at entering the lion's den. Michael acknowledged the pure malice in Buffy's comment with a sketched bow before spinning to walk out of the room. "Follow me." Buffy felt Ronan's hand ghost down her spine in a gentle warning that it wasn't good to draw too much attention to themselves. She leant into the caress for a second before taking a clear step away from it, accepting his intention but choosing to ignore his advice. Ever since the arrival of the Hive, the city had been raging and raving in her head, screaming for the blood of those that had taken away her people and damned her to 10,000 years of loneliness. Aside from fraying her already taut nerves, the constant yelling for revenge was slowly but surely starting to appeal to the Slayer inside of her. Added to that was her own, pure as snow, hatred of all things Wraith, making for a very explosive combination. The urge to jump Michael and strangle him was physical. She had to stop walking for a moment to lean against a wall and take a deep breath. John noticed and stopped beside her, asking if she was all right. Nodding her head, she pushed off the wall and made herself slip down into that place she had spent the last 8 years. The place where the pieces of her soul were crowding together, trying to escape the blood and pain and constant violence. She watched dispassionately as John took half a step back from her when he looked into her eyes, and instead of finding the woman he'd become tentative friends with over the last month, he saw only death. Slayer was back, and it was time for the Wraith to learn why she'd been the boogeyman of boogeymen once upon a time. Activating her fat with the thought, she ordered it to link to Rodney's handheld device, and through it, Atlantis, before stretching her mind toward the ship's heart, intent on finding it and ripping it out with her bare hands. As they walked through the hive, pretending to inspect it, when all they did was cover for Slayer, John was glad. He watched the look of concentration on her usually blank face, and he was glad that Beckett had failed to isolate what made her ATA gene different from everyone else's, because if he'd found it, then it might very well have been him digging through the ship's computers with his mind. The mere idea made him shudder. To have something so vile and evil in his mind sounded like a nightmare for him, and once more proved just how strong Ronan's lover was. Not that Beckett hadn't tried. He'd taken enough blood from Slayer to start a medium-sized bloodbath in the infirmary, but all his tests had come up with was the same result, that there was nothing different about Slayer's genetic makeup at all. Under the microscope, she was perfectly normal. Away from the microscope, she chuckled at random moments when some poor guard tripped on the other end of the city and Atlantis showed her. It took some getting used to. John got torn out of his thoughts by a beeping sound coming from Rodney's handheld. Michael and the soldiers stopped, obviously expecting an explanation. McKay opened his mouth, closed it, and opened it once more, looking for an answer until John risked a quick glance at the screen before meeting Michael's gaze head-on and stating, "Message from Atlantis. They've not made any significant progress yet." Luckily, the Wraith seemed satisfied with that, as they turned around and started walking again. John risked a quick glance back at the Slayer, who was currently walking with her eyes closed. The message Rodney had received had come from her, not Atlantis, and had been rather simple. Any information they might offer carries a hidden virus. On the one hand, John was glad that, A, Slayer had obviously found a link into the mainframe through her fat, as they'd hoped she would, and B, had managed to warn Weir before any damage was done. On the other hand, her message worried him a lot because it was the proof they'd been looking for that the Wraith did have ulterior motives, and that didn't bode well for them at all. An hour later, things were getting a bit tight. They'd toured almost the complete ship and found nothing to criticize. Michael was getting impatient, and Ronan was having trouble covering for his girlfriend. Slayer herself had a constant look of ice-cold concentration on her face, making her look like she was about to kill someone with chirurgic precision, which didn't sit well with the Wraith, since she was supposed to be a guard, and guards don't generally have to concentrate very hard. The killing part was a different matter, and it worried Shepard that Slayer's usually expressionless face had chosen exactly this day to unthaw. But there was nothing they could do. If they gave up now, chances were they would not get another opportunity, and Slayer's ability to communicate directly with ancient technology was their only hope of getting out of this mess relatively unscathed. They needed her to literally get to the root of the problem and rip it out. So they kept walking. Rodney kept sweating. Shepard kept wishing for his gun. Ronan kept trying to kill everyone with looks. And Buffy kept following them two steps behind, her eyes empty and cold. Down in Atlantis, things didn't look much better. Dr. Weir was fighting hard to pull constantly new arguments and demands out of her figurative hat in order to keep the visiting Wraith Queen occupied and blind to what was happening in her hive. Risking a quick glance at her watch, Elizabeth found herself doing something she hadn't done in a very long time. She sent a quick plea heavenwards for this to work out, and all her people to survive this. Buffy was developing the mother of all migraines after more than an hour of digging through the ship's mainframe with the help of the Fat, programmed in a language she knew but did not speak fluently. Oh, she'd found the Trojan virus in some data that had been prepared to go to Atlantis as a bargaining chip easily enough. But that was because the data had been at the very surface of the computers, waiting to be called upon. After that, things had become steadily harder to work out. In front of her mind's eye, miles upon miles of strings of data were slipping past, written in Wraith. They were not the actual codes, but how the ship presented its information to its telepathic handlers. It was still a mess when you didn't know what exactly you were looking for, and weren't a Wraith. Star charts flashed in front of her eyes, and gate addresses, plans and routes, the programs controlling the environment on the ship, the lights, the doors. It was all potentially useful information, but utterly useless until she'd found a way to take control of the whole ship without alerting someone, so she could destroy the ship, while at the same time blocking all communication with other hives. Their secret had to stay within the walls of this ship, if they were to have any chance at all of survival. And so she concentrated on the data strings flashing past, trying to ignore the way they reminded her of The Matrix, a movie she'd watched with Dawn one summer, and looking for a way to save her new home while on the outside, appearing like a stone-cold, bored killer. And then suddenly, she found it. It was so small she almost missed it, but rewinding the string a few seconds and rereading the information on it, she knew that she'd found what she was looking for. The symbols were just a bit softer around the edges, rounder, and they seemed to glow a bit from the inside. Buffy was positive that she'd found the place where the Wraith had linked their programs to the ancient base system. If she followed the thread, it would lead her directly into the core of the ship's computers, allowing her to rip its heart out. She would be able to manipulate the programs instead of just watching what her fat projected into her head. She felt a smile, smirk, slide across her face, pulled her mind away from her trusty fat, and dived into the mass of data, clinging to the ancient string. Rodney's handheld beeped ominously. Looking down and reading the message on the screen, he almost howled with relief. Almost there. Before long, the Wraith data faded away, leaving Slayer in the dark with only one string of data to cling to like a rope as she went deeper. Suddenly, the string started to come undone, falling to pieces all around her, forming the image of a room? It was a dark room, not rectangular, but bent in all the wrong directions, cold and desolate. It was one of the rooms the Wraith kept captives in. And at the far end of the room, a girl of no more than 15, maybe less, dressed in tattered red clothes, sat with her knees pulled to her chest. She looked scared, even at a distance, the red of her dress making her stand out in the gloomy environment. The girl looked up with big brown eyes, tear-filled, and begged, "Help me!" Slayer cocked her head to the side, not for one second trusting what she was seeing. There was something wrong with the girl's eyes. Something terribly wrong. "What are you?" she snapped, her voice fading much too fast in the cavernous room. "I am the ship you are currently on." "What?" Eloquent, maybe. Blunt, certainly. It worked for her. "I am ancient. I am what the ship is built upon. I am a slave. I am an image to make you see. I am a prisoner forced to serve my enemy. I am one of many, a sister to your home." As she, it, spoke, images flashed in Buffy's mind. Images of how the world used to be before the Wraith, of people living in harmony with the worlds they settled on, and the ships that carried them through space. The ships had all been almost sentient, and they still were. But many of them had been stolen by the Wraith, modified, and bent beyond recognition. They had wanted to fade with their masters, their humans, but the enemy had caught them like cattle. The Wraith raped what they were, twisting them into something vile and wrong. All that happened in a few seconds, barely a moment. The girl's eyes were wrong because they were soulless, but that did not make her suffering any less real. The thought of Atlantis, the city she'd come to know almost like a friend, being enslaved like the ship had been, made Buffy sick. And the girl stood directly in front of her, yelling in her mind and heart and soul, "Free me!" Rodney had no time to react as Michael tore his computer out of his hands to read the message displayed on it in bold letters. His head snapped up, reptile eyes focusing on the scientist. "Almost where? Almost home? Like E.T.? But you wouldn't know that, would you? It's not like..." He was cut off by Michael flinging his computer back at him and pulling a gun. Ronan sighed loudly, pulled a knife out of nowhere, and stabbed one of the soldiers guarding the group in the throat before he had a chance to move. The fight was on. Buffy felt pain shoot up her left foot, and found herself rising above the fake room and the fake girl, traveling back into the real world. The ship screamed. Slayer found the cause of the pain in her foot easily enough. John was standing on it, while shooting incoming Wraith with a gun he'd acquired from one of the bodies already piling up on the floor. He shot her a quick look as she pulled her foot out from under his and drew a hidden dagger out of her boot. "You looked kind of distant there," he announced with a shrug, shooting another Wraith. "I thought that might pull you out of it." She nodded and stabbed a Wraith that had been trying to sneak up on her in the gut, idly wondering why it didn't sound an alarm. But then all of their attackers seemed to be soldier Wraith, trained to fight, not to use their minuscule brains. All brawn, no brain. A few feet away, Rodney was beating on another soldier with his demolished computer, surprisingly keeping the Wraith on the defensive. Ronan was ending soldiers left, right, and center. There was simply no other word for the precise and fast way he annihilated the enemy. Dr. Elizabeth Weir was not an impatient person in general, but she hadn't heard from her team in the Hive since Rodney had forwarded a message from Buffy more than 80 minutes ago. Still, no alarm had been raised yet. She decided to take that as a good sign. Colonel Caldwell was sitting in his commando chair on board the Daedalus, waiting for some sign, any sign at all, from Shepard and his men inside the Wraith Hive. They were supposed to bring down the shields, allowing his people to beam them out before they blew the hive to pieces. But so far, they'd heard nothing. He hated waiting. Slayer nodded to herself. So far, everything seemed under control. As long as no one sounded the alarm, the brawl might be enough time for her to find what they had been looking for. As she let her muscles fall into the familiar, automatic dance of death, her mind sank back down into the walls and floors of the ship, calling for the girl. The room was the same as she returned, much faster than the first time, but the girl was not. Instead of standing, she was now sitting on the ground, heavy, rusting chains wrapped all around her, from her neck to her ankles, making her look like a grotesque sort of mummy. "Free me," she repeated, her soulless eyes staring up at the Slayer from the floor. "Where did the chains come from?" The girl blinked slowly. "They are images of the programs that bind me and make me unable to act. I created them so you can free me easier. All you have to do is break them." Puffy shook her head. "You computers are weird shit sometimes, you know?" The girl mimicked her action of shaking her head before explaining. "I do not understand this weird shit. What is it?" Chuckling, Slayer bent and grabbed the first heavy chain, feeling along it for a weakness. When she found it, she gathered all her mental strength and pulled on an image of a chain holding down the image of a girl that was really a 10,000-year-old ship. Weird shit, indeed. Rodney slammed the back of his handheld into the side of Soldier's head, knocking him off balance long enough for Ronan to come over and finish him off. The first chain broke, and the girl gifted Buffy with a brilliant smile that went perfectly with her fake eyes. John had taken to shooting anything that entered the corridor they were fighting in from either side, hoping to avoid anyone sounding an alarm. Slowly but surely, the bodies were piling up. Another chain broke in Buffy's arms, despite not being real in the artificial prison room, shook with the effort. Ronan took down what Shepard missed, all the while keeping an eye on his lover, who was obviously working on autopilot. Her movements were tireless and smooth, but the usual expression of glee that came with slaughtering Wraith was missing. Buffy worked like a machine. One more chain to go, just one more. The girl could almost move freely again, only her ankle remained shackled to the hard ground. Buffy used everything she had left, every bit of mental strength, to tear at that chain, to rip the program the Wraith had used to tie an almost sentient being up for millennia. She pulled and pulled and pulled, and finally the chain gave, broken links flying in all directions and falling to bits of data before they touched the ground. The ship roared in triumph. Slayer smiled, a cold smile. Elizabeth almost fell out of her chair as the ground beneath her feet suddenly started shaking like it had at Buffy's arrival. Something was bothering Atlantis, and that could only mean one thing. "Dispose of them," she ordered, pointing at the Wraith Queen and her two guards in an unusual display of coldness. Taylor immediately pounced on them, eager to do her part, after she'd not been allowed to go with Shepard and the others. The Queen shrieked. Rodney landed flat on his ass as the whole hive ship started to vibrate madly and the lights flickered. Once she was sure that the situation was under control, Elizabeth turned and sprinted out of the room toward the nearest balcony, fixing her gaze on the hive floating high above the city. Buffy's mind snapped back into her body with a little more force than was healthy, causing her to stumble just a bit as the ship started to vibrate. There was a sharp pain in her shoulder suddenly, and as she looked down, she found an injured Wraith lying on the ground, a glistening knife still raised toward her. Without hesitation, she stepped on his neck, snapping it. Ronan dove towards Buffy as soon as he saw the dying Wraith move, but he was too slow. He was dead by the time he reached her. All he could do was pull off his shirt to press against her bleeding stomach. The cut was deep and jagged, going from her left hip up to the right side of her ribs, and it bled too much for his tastes. Buffy took the shirt from him, holding it to her wound herself after risking a quick glance beneath the garment. "Ah, damn!" Inside her head, the ship was shrieking with 10,000 years of pent-up rage. She felt something wet on her lip and stuck out her tongue to taste it. Her nose was bleeding from the pressure inside her head, and her vision slowly turned pink. Colonel Caldwell jumped in his sleep when the biggest screen on the bridge suddenly activated, showing an incoming message. He nodded at one of his officers, who opened it. The note inside made him snort in amusement. "Taxi, please!" "Let's get those people home," he snapped. Shepard thought he could hear the faint sounds of a female voice screaming in agony and rage as he sprinted toward Slayer and Ronan. Or rather, Ronan with Slayer in his arms. She was bleeding out of her ears, nose, and eyes, not to mention one hell of an impressive cut in her stomach. The lights around them were flickering like mad, the walls themselves were shaking, and alarms finally started ringing throughout the ship. It was pandemonium all around. The screaming, he suddenly realized, was a ship, and Buffy heard it. Then suddenly there was a bright white light, and everything around them faded. As soon as they were dropped onto the floor of the Daedalus, Buffy's eyes focused on the colonel, blood still running freely down her cheeks and chin. She looked like death warmed over. "Move the ship! Now!" Weir watched in stunned silence and shock as the hive blew up in an explosion that rocked the whole planet. "Please, let them be safe." Around her, people were cheering and hugging each other. They'd survived. The cheering suddenly gained in volume, and a shout from Beckett made Elizabeth run into the gate room, where she found her four wayward heroes sitting and lying on the floor, looking like they'd been hit by a truck. Repeatedly. Carson was already fussing over Buffy, who seemed to be faring worst. She was bloody from head to toe. "What happened?" Buffy slapped Carson's hands aside, but didn't try to sit up, proof of how exhausted she was. Weir suddenly felt bad for asking. "I freed the ancient part of the ship. Turns out, she didn't very much like what the Wraith had done to her, and blew them up as punishment, and..." She trailed off suddenly, her eyes going unfocused. Ronan looked more worried than any of them had ever seen him. "Buffy?" he asked, sounding unsure. She shook her head and then winced, wiping a bit of blood out of her face. Atlantis just forwarded a message from the ship. "What did it..." Ronnie winced. "She... say?" She smiled weakly at him, looking quite gruesome with blood smeared all over her face. "She said thank you. And I think I'll just..." She waved a hand in front of her face weakly and promptly fainted. It didn't take Carson all that long to patch up Buffy's stomach. He was more worried about her head, as he didn't quite believe John when he'd said the bleeding had been caused by the ship's death scream. In the end, he had to accept it, though, as everything else was completely all right. Buffy discharged herself less than 24 hours later, bribing Ronan into kidnapping her from the infirmary in the middle of the night. The secret of Atlantis's existence remained a secret, as far as the Wraith were concerned. The bodies of the Queen and her guards were raided by Beckett before they were burned. A nurse commented that even the enemy deserved some respect. Carson offered to send her back to Earth with the Daedalus immediately, and never come back. Rodney and his geek friends had a field day, or 50, now that their theory about Wraith technology being based on ancient was proved. They spent most of their time locked away in the labs, trying to find new ways to disable the enemy's ships. A month after the whole event, Weir stopped Buffy after dinner one evening, handing her a file which the Slayer locked herself in her room with. Ronan found her a few hours later, lying on the floor, loose papers strewn all around her. "Are you all right?" he asked, trying not to sound worried. She didn't even open her eyes as she started talking. Alexander Harris died in a car crash when he was 17. His best friends, Willow Rosenberg and Jesse Miller, survived the crash and became a couple in the aftermath of their grief. They are married and have two cute twin girls. Willow runs a bookshop, Jesse does construction work. Rupert Giles is the curator of the British Museum. He retires next year in order to spend more time with his wife, Jennifer Giles. Faith Lane died at the age of 15 on the streets of Boston on an overdose of heroin she'd gotten from a John. Daniel Osborne is the bassist of a moderately successful band. Elizabeth Summers is married to one Riley Finn. He has a lot of affairs and generally treats her like shit. She never had a younger sister named Dawn, and she never set foot into the town of Sunnydale. He sat down beside her, running a finger over the hint of skin visible between her shirt and pants. "This is not your dimension." He didn't phrase it like a question. "No." Her voice sounded blank, telling him nothing for once. "Is that a good thing or a bad thing?" She sighed, finally sitting up to meet his gaze. "I don't know. I wanted this to be my world, just a bit, to see them again. But on the other hand, I'm glad." "You are?" It was his turn to sound blank, in order to allow her to speak freely. She didn't need to worry about his emotions when she didn't have her own figured out yet. For a long moment, she looked away, playing idly with his fingers on her stomach, avoiding the question. Then she raised her head, a look of defiance in her eyes. "Yes. I'm not the girl they used to know, and I don't think they could understand me now. I'm a lot colder, harder, stronger, and deader. Besides..." She stopped playing with his fingers, drawing his arm around her, before climbing into his lap, one leg on either side of his thighs. "Besides, I kind of like the weather here. It's nice." Ronan chuckled, the sound rumbling through his chest and making her wiggle just a bit. She was never going to say, "I love you," and he would never expect her to. They were both here. They were alive. They were free. And when they looked into each other's eyes, they saw themselves. That was enough for both of them. The end.